to the fourth case. This is Travis Williams versus Waste Management. Ms. Walker?
Good morning. Travis Williams was a laborer at a garbage dump at a waste management facility in Springfield, Illinois, where he was harassed by co-workers to the point where it became a hostile work environment, to the point where his safety was threatened, and to the point where he quit his job. Enough was enough. He decided to lose his job and not put at stake his life or limb. The district court decided that wasn't enough. The district court also decided that Waste Management had done enough in terms of corrective action. This is a case about who should decide when enough is enough. And on behalf of Travis Williams, I argue that this is a case that should go to the jury, that a jury should decide when is a threat to your safety enough that you're justified to quit your job, and when does an employer who has notice of harassment, when has an employer done enough to prevent workplace violence? The district court, I think, correctly found that there was a hostile work environment, that Travis had been subjected to racial slurs, he had been subjected to being teased about looking like the gorilla at Chuck E. Cheese, he had been jabbed in the butt with a broomstick, and everybody laughed because Travis was made jump. He was injured in an accident set up with a pipe wrench. He was detected before anything happened, sabotaged to a riding lawnmower blade. And then one of the harassers, as the final straw, broke into a fit of anger and ordered him out of the garage. And the court found that that was a hostile work environment. Waste Management knew about the racial slurs, they knew about being described and teased about looking like a gorilla, being goosed by a broom, they knew about a hangman's noose, that the cord to a piece of equipment that he used had been tied into the shape of a hangman's noose. And Waste Management managers recognized that was harassment. They knew about that. Virgil Beckham and Eddie Cleeton.
Allegedly doing
the mechanic.
The lion's share of the harassing
right
here. What is the company supposed to do when it hears a complaint like this, goes to those two guys, and they deny it?
Right.
The company then separates them or tries to. What more is there to do at that point? Just in the real world, what are they supposed to do?
Okay, and let me address that. To some extent, the court in the Putman versus WBBM case described a response to threats like that and the kind of investigation that's appropriate. In our case, Travis went to his supervisor, who then went to the mechanic's supervisor. The mechanic's supervisor spoke to both.
His supervisor is Kern.
His supervisor, he had two for a while. This is Whittinghill. Went to Whittinghill. Whittinghill went to Becca Dutre, who was the supervisor for the mechanics. The mechanic's supervisor spoke to the mechanics together so that they could corroborate their story. We didn't interview them separately so you could judge credibility. Interviewed only them. Becca Duder never went to interview Travis to judge a credibility between the accused and the accuser. He never went to search to see if there were other witnesses. This hangman's noose had been apparently lying around in the garage for days. Other people saw it. Becca Duder never went to look for the noose for corroborating evidence. Yet he decided he could not issue discipline because there was no corroborating evidence. You cannot find what you do not look for. So instead, what they did was they banished Travis from taking the breaks in the garage and said, you go out to the transfer station and take your breaks out there. Nevertheless, Travis has to go into the garage to fuel his equipment. His equipment is stored there, his workbench is there, and the ice machine for the cool drinks is also in there. So he does have to be in the garage to do his work. The accusers are informed that Travis has tattled on them, so now they know who's the guy who's tattled. And the accusers are informed that, essentially, we don't care what you do as long as nobody else sees it. So if there's no corroborating evidence, we won't discipline you. Just don't do it so there's corroborating evidence. What this really does is send the message, not that we don't tolerate harassment, it's don't get caught. And here's how not to get caught. So this puts Travis in a position. And then Travis, of course, is told by his supervisor, gee, they denied it. There will be no discipline. There was no corroborating evidence. You go take your breaks down here. So the message to Travis is, the victim gets punished. If you complain, nothing will be done. And these guys now know you complained about them, and they now know they can get away with it if there's no witnesses. During the period of time that he is separated, and actually he learned to operate a front-end loader, he learned to operate another piece of heavy equipment on the site, so he was not having to go into the garage as much. They assigned him during the state fair to work the heavy loading equipment, so he, again, was not having to be in the garage very much. And there was verbal friction during that time when he was assigned to other work. But when that work ended and he had to go back to the labor activities, he had to be back in the garage. And one of the next things that happened to him is that as he's walking through the garage, one of the mechanics, Eddie, says, gee, Travis, give me a hand here. Hold on to this wrench. And Travis wasn't trying to pick a fight with anybody. Somebody asked him for help. He puts a hand on the wrench, holds on to it. Clayton goes around to the other side, puts a torque wrench, an air torque wrench, on the other side of the bolt, gives it a good burst of air, which, of course, torques the bolt, torques the wrench, which flies up, and this is a big wrench, flies up in the air, hits Travis on the head, doesn't draw blood, he's not going to report it. Clayton had told him the week before, yeah, I got it. I set up an accident and hit somebody with a wrench, and I'd do it again. Travis doesn't report that. Endures. The next incident that happens is he gets chewed out by his boss, Curran, who is one of his other supervisors, and Curran is on that site every day, has an office near the garage. Curran chews him out for letting the grass grow too long. Travis says, my lawnmower is in the shop to be fixed. And Curran says, well, what's wrong with those mechanics? I'll go get them to do it. Curran goes and chews the mechanics out and says, Travis can't do his job if you don't fix the equipment. So Virgil Beckham says, I'll fix it. I'll fix it good. Fixes it, gives it to Travis and says, Travis, hop onto this lawnmower and get the cutting. I fixed it real good for you. And Travis is suspicious because Virgil's never been friendly to him. He inspects it, and the blade on the lawnmower is wobbling. It's so loose. That lawnmower had not been in the shop to fix the blade. It had been there to fix the motor. It was delivered to him, fixed real good, with a loose blade. Travis complains to Curran. Curran chews out Beckham. That's dangerous. Fix it. Both men go about their job. The next thing later that afternoon, Travis comes into the garage and Beckham says, hey, what are you trying to do? Cut down that picket fence with that weed eater? And Travis says, man, just let me do my job. Can you just leave me alone? Virgil flies into a rage, swears at him, screams at him, loses his temper, and tells him to get out of the garage. Travis goes to Curran and says, we're going to have a problem here. This man is disrespecting me, and I will defend myself. What does Waste do? It's now had knowledge of several incidences of conflict between the harassers. Unfortunately, Curran doesn't know about the history of racial harassment and the report of racial harassment. The solution is make the men apologize, tell him not to do it again, and tell each, both of them, if there's any conflict, they both will be disciplined. That's when Travis quit. He says to his wife when he gets home, says, "Honey, if I go back to work and something happens, and it just so happens that I got hurt, I might not make it home. Next time, maybe it won't be a lawnmower blade. Maybe next time it'll be a huge 18-wheel tire truck or some other piece of heavy equipment." He quit his job because he was afraid, because waste management had not done enough. And that's an issue that should go to the jury. Let Travis Williams argue his case to a jury. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Chief Barra.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'd like to start my presentation with an answer to Justice Evans' question. What is a company to do?
Judge. We're only judges.
Thank you, Judge. What is a company to do? I think it's to do what waste management did here. Stop the harassment. That's what Travis Williams told me happened after the company addressed these incidents. The incidents with regard to the black jokes, the goosing, the electric cord. The company addressed it. And it wasn't that the company was hiding. It wasn't that Mr. Curran happened to be African American or Mr. Whittinghill were hiding. They pursued Travis to find out if there were problems on July 17, 2000. And then when they found out there was a problem, they addressed it. Because Mr. Williams said in his deposition testimony, it didn't happen again after July 17. No time between then and the time he was terminated, the time he actually walked off the job. Instead, judges, what we have left is two incidents that happened in the last 6 weeks of his employment. One was this air wrench, which the plaintiffs and the appellants have made into an incident that was intentional. Frankly, I don't think anybody can really understand how that could be when a wrench flies out of the plaintiff's hand, flies up in the air and hits him in his head, but so be it. There's no connection to any racist conduct. There was no words that were said.
How long did he walk off the job after the 17th of July?
3 days, Judge. He was gone after July, he actually did not walk off the job at that point in time. Earlier that month, he had walked out of the off his job because he had caught some poison ivy. And Mr. Curran had apparently said something to him about getting a doctor's slip. He didn't bring the doctor's slip. He was 3 days, no call, no show at that point in time. Mr. Whittinghill, happened to be the Caucasian supervisor, again at that point, Judge, sought out Mr. Williams and asked him to come back to work and said, "You know what, we're going to reinstate you. We want to make this work." That happened, according to Mr. Williams, before he made the complaint to Mr. Williams about these two mechanics harassing him.
Yeah, his whole employment here was about 10 weeks long, I think. The time he started till he quit. What do you think drove him to, prompted him to leave?
In the final analysis, I can only say what he told me in his deposition testimony. He, I think, had left his job because it was hot, because there was poison ivy, because it was difficult work at this garbage transfer station. I think that he had already left once because of that. The company had addressed his claim of discrimination, harassment, hostile work environment. We now have 6 weeks. Again, there was the air wrench incident, but as plaintiff's counsel said, it didn't even didn't hurt him enough to either seek treatment or to even report it to anybody. And then you've got this final August 31 incident in which he does have an argument with one of these mechanics. At the end of that day, Judge, before he walked off the job, and really he didn't walk off, he left at the end of the day, but before that happened, remember there was a meeting held in which after he had complained about the argument, the plaintiff appellant had complained about the argument, all the supervisors got together, had the two gentlemen stand together, and basically there was a little bit of an argument between them in which they both aired their views. The plaintiff appellant wasn't afraid that day, Judge, because he had told Anthony Curran, the supervisor, that in fact he, and I quote, excuse me, I will whoop his ass, end quote. So he wasn't afraid at that point, Judge. And this had already happened, the incident with the lawnmower had already happened earlier that day. So he wasn't afraid. The two gentlemen get together, they air their views. The supervisors talk to both of them and say they don't want any more arguments. The lawnmower blade doesn't come up, plaintiff doesn't mention it. At that point, plaintiff said that he was satisfied with what had happened. Virgil said that he was satisfied with what had happened. The men shook hands. The men apologized to one another. At that point, if the plaintiff was either afraid for his life, for his safety, if he felt that he was being harassed, if he felt that something had happened with the mower that should have been brought to their attention that was some evidence of some type of threat to his safety, he could have said that.
The problem here is wanting to look at this as just one incident isolated from the other. The hostile work environment, and I don't think you even deny that, do you? That early on, when he started there, that the gorilla comments, the noose, all those sorts of things. Inappropriate, if true, if it happened. Inappropriate. And then the other incidents, if they occurred as he claims they did, and then you look at them in light of what had happened earlier, and this is just a very short 10-week period, why shouldn't the jury get to decide whether, viewing this whole picture, whether there was a hostile work environment that the company tolerated and didn't do enough to stop?
Because, Judge Evans, because of what Travis Williams himself had testified to, he told me that after July 17th, he saw no more racial incidents at all. When I asked him the question that you asked me, at the end of the day on August 31, 6 weeks later, why did you leave? The only answer he could give is because I felt unsafe. But I said, do you feel that the company was discriminating against you, harassing you, doing anything to promulgate any type of harassment or discrimination? He said, no. I believe that management was on my side.
It's all a deposition record, I think.
All deposition record, Judge. Record 23, Exhibit A, at page 157. He himself, Judge, basically indicates that the racial harassment stopped on July 17th. And what he saw happen with the mower on August 31 was an incident that he certainly argued with and about. But himself on August 31, at the end of the day, during the meeting, never brought it up as any evidence of racial discrimination. He never connected it to the comments that had stopped 6 weeks earlier at all. He provides no nexus, Judge, none whatsoever. And now, when has that become? Well, of course, when we've entered the litigation, suddenly it is a racial incident. That's the first time it's ever mentioned. In fact, the court asked me earlier, how long was he out the first time he left? Well, he was out again after he left, at the end of the day on August 31. He was out again for 3 more days. And in fact, that's why he was treated as a voluntary resignation, 3 days, no call, no show, again. At any point, he could have indicated, look, I really do have a problem. Never happened. So there is no nexus there, Judge. There is no discrimination that spanned over those 6 weeks in any way. And that's why the district court was correct in terms of its assessment as to why waste management is not liable for any form of hostile work environment. Why? Because the company took prompt remedial action. They took effective action. As this court has already held in the Tutman decision, that's what our standard is. Not whether or not these two managers at this garbage disposal station followed any certain procedure or the perfect procedure to the letter. Instead, they did what the law requires, which is take effective action. The same, if I may briefly address the issue of constructive discharge. I think it's obvious from the facts that the company didn't terminate him. But was what happened on August 31 enough to be adverse employment action? I don't think so, under the standards set by this court, whatsoever. We don't have the types of things that we've seen in the previous cases here, with the brandishing of pistols, or the grabbing of a plaintiff and screaming and showing them weapons. That's not what happened here at all. In fact, what we had was we had an incident in the morning on August 31, and then later in the day, a meeting and an attempt to see if there was a problem, and the plaintiff indicated that there wasn't. In that instance, frankly, the district court below's decision and finding that there was no adverse employment action is buttressed by the very facts that the plaintiff himself presented in his deposition, undisputed by the waste management. May it please the court if it has no other questions.
Thank you very much. I believe your time expired, so the case will be taken under advisement.